do a trial. The only person that's been able to visit him is his lawyer, and that's because she's fighting very, very hard to get those visitations. He has really awful conditions that have been documented by multiple organizations that show you that there is an organized and declared policy of the prison authorities to treat the 2,600 detainees that are inside these prisons poorly.
Well, Dr. Azra Ziada, you were in touch with Dr. Abu Safia every day for months. Your final thoughts, both on the film as well as on his condition now?
So I think the film really exposes and captures the process and the blueprint that Israel uses to attack and decommission hospitals. And I think the film is the most pertinent at this moment in time because this blueprint is being used right now across Gaza. However, it's not really under the limelight and it's not as exposed as it was when Dr. Abu Safia was in Kamal Adwan.
I want to thank you both for being with us, Dr. Azra Ziada. We thank you so much, London-based medical doctor, healthcare systems analyst, who's helped gather evidence of war crimes from Gaza and has been in touch with a network of doctors and healthcare workers in Gaza, including Dr. Abu Safia. And thank you so much to Amel Gutatfi, who is the director of this documentary, The Disappearance of Dr. Abu Safia, which is available online. We'll link to the whole documentary. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Nicole Salazar. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
This is KBOO Portland, volunteer-powered community radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. KBOO's Board of Directors meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from 988 Oregon, a public service providing help from trained counselors for when stress, worry, and sadness strike. Help is available by calling or texting 988. More info at 988oregon.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the Portland ICE facility violates its land use permit. Students and families work together to shield against ICE attacks. And the EPA considers approving four new pesticides that contain forever chemicals. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, September 18, 2025. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Eric Leuschner. Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, violated the terms of its land use agreement, according to a formal notice issued by the City of Portland. ICE opened its facility on Southwest Macadam in 2011 and signed on to certain criteria with the city. That included an agreement that anyone detained at the facility would not be held longer than 12 hours. The City of Portland says ICE has violated that rule at least 25 times in the past year. The ICE building is a processing center meant for check-ins, not long-term detention. Mayor Keith Wilson said in a statement, quote, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement made clear detention limitation commitments to our community, and we believe they broke those policies more than 24 times. I am proud of our team for conducting a thorough, thoughtful investigation and referring the matter to the next steps in the land use violation process, end quote. Portlanders have been pushing the city to revoke ICE's permit to use the building for months, including over 100 days of protest at the facility. But it's been debated whether closing the facility would help better protect local immigrants targeted by ICE. The notice was sent today, and ICE has 30 days to correct the issue. 60 days from now, the permitting department can start a process to reconsider the land use approval. Protesters interrupted the Portland City Council meeting last night, and multiple demonstrators were escorted out by security. Council President Elena Pertl-Ginney read a statement about the ICE facility issue. Here's an excerpt from the exchange with protesters and the statement.
Good evening. It is 6 p.m. on Wednesday, September 17th. I am calling
City Council. We will
today's City Council meeting.
While ICE continues to terrorize our community.
Thank you so much for being here tonight.
We are grateful that you have finally issued a notice of violation for ICE's conditional use facility.
Thank you so much for being here. As you saw, there's information that will be coming out.
Follow through and revoke the ICE permit.
I'm happy for us to have more conversation about this later, but unfortunately there's not a lot we can do right in this moment, and I'd like us to be able to start this meeting. We have people here for important business. Colleagues, I have a brief statement I'm going to read so that people who are here and are not disrupting our meeting have a sense of the conversation that is happening.
We are done with this.
Portland Permitting and Development has been investigating complaints that were made surrounding the ICE facility. A notice of violation will be sent tomorrow. I understand the urgency here, but I anticipate that this could result in a land use process that will come before council. And under Portland City Code, prior to rendering a decision, this council must refrain from ex parte communication or any communication that shows bias. Ex parte communication occurs when we engage in communication regarding a pending matter outside of the land use hearing, and bias is when we do so in a way that shows that we would be unable to make a fair and impartial decision based on the evidence before us. In order to protect our ability to participate in a potential future land use hearing, in order for members of this council to be a part of that process, we are not able to review all of the evidence right now. And we are not able to express opinions on this matter, because if we do so, we will not be able to participate in the important decisions that may come before us in the future. We understand the urgency, but there are limitations to what we can do today in order to be able to continue moving this process along over the next few months.
That was Portland Council President Elena Pertl-Ginney reading a statement about the limitations councilors face in dealing with the ICE facility in Southwest Portland. The notice issued by the permitting department is the start of a longer process. Other councilors are looking at different strategies too, like Councilor Angelita Murillo. She said in a TikTok that her office is looking at measures to disincentivize landlords from renting buildings to ICE through fees. Portland incurs costs from the presence of the ICE facility, including through environmental cleanup to the surrounding area, which has been repeatedly doused in tear gas and other chemical weapons. The father of a student at Cesar Chavez K-8 was arrested by federal immigration agents while dropping off his kid at school on Tuesday. By the next morning, parents, caregivers, and community members had come up with a plan to prevent it in the future. Parents stationed themselves around the school on the lookout for suspicious vehicles, ones with no license plates or masked drivers. If they saw anything, they planned to call the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition hotline. In the 2 days since Rafael Arriola Caballero's arrest, over 550 people have donated to a GoFundMe for his legal fees, organized by one of his daughters. In the description, his daughter Esmeralda writes, quote, "My 7-year-old siblings are devastated and asking us where my dad is. How do I tell them? All we have from my dad that they left was his coffee cup, his favorite hat, and his favorite snack, a bag of peanuts," end quote. The PTA at Chavez is also looking at carpool programs to make sure kids can get to school without putting their parents in danger. They also plan to get the school community to take a Know Your Rights training on how to handle ICE agents. The public comment period ends tomorrow, Friday, September 19, on the Trump administration's proposal to withdraw the roadless rule that protects certain federal lands. Suzanne Potter speaks to Megan Burzell from the Wilderness Society to learn more.
The public has until tomorrow to weigh in on whether the federal government should strike down the so-called roadless rule that protects certain federal lands. The Trump administration wants to open up about 45 million acres of wild lands to logging and road construction. Megan Burzell with the Wilderness Society says this would disturb forests that have no roads but are very popular for biking, ATVs, hiking, and fishing.
If this rule is undone, the management of those places is going to shift from being focused on the recreation experience to more of a timber experience. So we can expect to see more new roads built.
The U.S. Forest Service argues that it needs more roads to control forest fires. But research from the Wilderness Society shows that wildfires are up to 4 times more likely in areas with roads, often because of the higher risk of sparks or discarded cigarettes. California is home to 4.4 million acres of inventoried roadless areas. The feds are required to take the public comment into account during the next step, which is the environmental impact statement. Burzell says she hopes the administration will compromise.
So far, all that's on the table is a complete repeal. So it remains to be seen whether there will be some middle ground offered when the environmental impact statement is released in several months.
Advocates question the wisdom of building more roads since the Forest Service currently has a $5 billion backlog of road maintenance and has recently lost large numbers of employees to cutbacks. A rescission of the roadless rule would not affect designated wilderness areas, which are protected by Congress. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
The chair of the Lane County Commission is under fire for accusations of workplace harassment. David Laval is accused of calling the leader of an agency the county works with a, quote, stripper on a pole. He is also accused of calling former county attorney a spinster. County Administrator Steve Mokrohinsky sent an email earlier this month outlining the behavior and saying Laval's actions led to a $250,000 settlement. In the email, he wrote of Laval, quote, "You have been defiant and repeatedly escalated the issues by deflecting responsibility, demeaning others, and accusing those who have raised the concerns of being at fault. Employees and taxpayers deserve better," end quote. Laval has denied the allegations of sexism. He told Oregon Live, quote, "The only place that is having complaints coming towards me is out of the DEI department. We live in a politically charged environment now where it behooves people to take words out of context." Laval has the power to fire Mokrohinsky if he can find 2 other votes on the county commission to do it. It's unclear if his usual allies would support the move. The former CDC director testifies before Congress. Federal budget deadline looms as talks shift to healthcare funding. And former President Barack Obama discusses Charlie Kirk's death. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks. We're following our democracy in historic times.
I worry about our school systems. I worry about our medical institutions having to take care of sick kids that could have been prevented by effective and safe vaccines. I worry about the future of trust in public health.
Former CDC Director Susan Menares testified before Congress for the first time since her firing last month, saying she was dismissed for, quote, holding the line on scientific integrity. Menares says Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. told her to accept changes to vaccine policy before they were finalized. She says in one heated meeting, Kennedy accused CDC staff of killing children. With a budget deadline at the end of the month, congressional Republicans want a 45-day continuing resolution at current levels. This would give appropriators until late November to write a budget, but some Democrats are refusing to support it, saying the hard line sends a message to the White House. Indiana Republican Marlon Stutzman says Senate Democrats want reinstatement of Affordable Care Act subsidies cut in the GOP mega bill. He says that would just delay an inevitable reckoning over rising health care costs.
This is a challenge that our country is going to have to deal with because it's one of our largest budget items, and so I think that we're going to have to start taking some sort of measures senators to say, look, we've got to rein in the cost of health care, because then that'll bring down the cost of insurance.
Along with megabill ACA and Medicaid cuts projected to mean they'll have to care for millions more uninsured patients, U.S. community health centers say they face a fiscal cliff when the budget expires October 1st. Dr. Q Ree with the National Association of Community Health Centers says their budgets were already far short of their needs.
There is an estimate of $7.3 billion more of a gap in terms of lost revenue. If we can't fill this gap, it will lead to sites closing. It will lead to staff being laid off.
Ree cites new studies that show the scale of disruption can cause as many as 5,000 to 6,000 preventable deaths a year. Former President Barack Obama says the country is at an inflection point after the death of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. While acknowledging political violence is an unfortunate part of being a democratic country, he notes vigorous public debate and healthy disagreement are the best ways to respond to differing political arguments. But he says the Trump administration's response has been misguided.
When we have the weight of the United States government behind extremist views, we've got a problem. We're at an inflection point in the sense that we always have to fight for our democracy.
Since Kirk's death, conservatives have posted what they describe as examples of people justifying the killing in the hopes those people will be fired or canceled on social media. Some at the White House have fully endorsed that, and Speaker of the House Mike Johnson insists that's not the government censoring free speech.
That's not the government censoring speech. That's personal behavior and decorum, and you have a right to enforce that. I don't think it's a violation of core principles for people to have appropriate measures taken when they act like crazy people online.
And ABC Television has pulled Jimmy Kimmel Live off the air indefinitely after the host's, quote, controversial statements about Kirk's killer. The FCC chairman had said Kimmel's comments put the network's license at risk at a time when Nexstar Media Group, which owns many of its affiliates, is seeking approval for a merger. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. Then, a look inside the Portland Underground Grad School with Dave Johnson. At 6 o'clock, it's Rose City Native Radio. Then at 7, American Indian and Alaska Native Living. Tonight's weather will be clear with an overnight low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be sunny and warm with a high of 81. Today in history, in 1948, Margaret Chase Smith of Maine becomes the first woman elected to the U.S. Senate without completing another senator's term. The quote of the day is from British author Samuel Johnson, born this day in 1709. He said, quote, "In order that all men may be taught to speak truth, it is necessary that all likewise should learn to hear it." Alaska is asking the Supreme Court to rule on whether rural residents in the state should get to keep their fishing preferences. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The state of Alaska wants the U.S. Supreme Court to decide whether rural residents, which includes many Alaska Native people, should maintain subsistence fishing preference in the waterways of federal lands. KYUK reports that last month, a panel of federal appeals court judges sided with the federal government in its lawsuit against the state over salmon management on the Kuskokwim River. The feds sued the state after clashes over fish management on the lower river in 2021 and 2022. Indigenous groups, including the Kuskokwim Intertribal Fish Commission and the Alaska Federation of Natives, signed on to the case in support of the federal government, which is advocating for a rural Alaska preference. But on Monday, the state asked the U.S. Supreme Court to take up the case, arguing that federal law shows that the state has the authority over its own waterways, even on federal land. On Tuesday, the New Mexico congressional delegation and Pueblo leaders held a press conference outside the Capitol in Washington, D.C. They urged Congress and the Trump administration to continue upholding protections for Chaco Canyon against oil and gas drilling. KUNM's Jeanette DeDios has more.
In 2023, former Interior Secretary Deb Haaland created a 10-mile buffer zone for Chaco Canyon National Historical Park that prevents any oil and gas drilling for 20 years. But with the new presidential administration, the buffer zone is being reconsidered. Among the Pueblo leaders that spoke, Governor of Santa Ana, Myron Armijo, urged Acting Interior Secretary Doug Burgum to visit Chaco Canyon.
It's a very sacred place. I've witnessed it. Our ancestors are there. When we pray, you can feel it. You can feel it in your body that they're talking to you. They're talking to us.
Representative Teresa Ledger Fernandez reaffirmed that Bergman had committed to a meeting with tribal leaders.
You told me you would. Live up to your word. Live up to the commitment you made in committee when I asked you.
U.S. Senator Martin Heinrich discussed a past visit by former Interior Secretary David Bernhardt to Chaco Canyon.
He realized, as a result of meaningfully consulting with tribal leadership in that place, that Chaco Canyon is not a museum. It is a living cultural landscape with direct relationships with the Pueblos today. And that's the difference.
While Pueblo leaders are committed to preserving the cultural site, the Navajo Nation sued the Interior Department in January in an attempt to reverse the buffer zone to 5 miles instead of 10, noting that it harmed tribal members who depend on oil and gas drilling in the area.
For National Native News, I'm Jeanette DeDios.
To offset declining crab and salmon fisheries, communities along Alaska's coast have turned to kelp, or seaweed. The Shunack tribe of Kodiak won a milestone $2.3 million grant to process locally grown kelp. The tribe owns and operates Kodiak Island Wild Source, the only seafood plant in town that processes kelp. Its main products are frozen and smoked salmon, cod, and halibut. Wild Source President Chris Sanito says since adapting its facility to dry and preserve kelp, it's hard to keep up with demand.
Boy, some years it's really a bumper crop. When the lighting is right and the seed stock was good, it really grows well in Kodiak.
Sanito says the new processing plant should boost the tribe's earnings and diversify the local economy. Sanito says when kelp is added to soil, it absorbs water and helps plant withstand drought. It also encourages root growth and is a sought-after ingredient in the emerging biostimulant industry. Alaska Mariculture Cluster awarded the grant. It received its funding through the U.S. Economic Development Administration's Build Back Better program. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
The Environmental Protection Agency is seeking approval of 4 new pesticides that environmental advocates say contain forever chemicals, or PFAS. Experts say rollbacks by the Trump administration will give pesticide makers permission to create more harmful products. Frieda Ross has more in Arkansas.
Some environmental advocates feel advances that have cut back on harmful chemicals are being eroded, just as the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission approved a $1.8 million grant to test surface waters for forever chemicals, or PFAS. The Trump administration is rolling back policies that address chemical contamination in the food supply. The Environmental Protection Agency is seeking approval for 4 new pesticides that qualify for PFAS. Environmental Health Science Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, Nathan Donnelly, says the EPA is using a new definition of PFAS that will allow the pesticides to be approved.
Eventually, more science is going to come out. And if you have something that breaks down in a couple days, that's fine. But if you've got something that sticks around for generations, any new science that comes out in the next 2 years or 5 years or 10 years saying this stuff is more dangerous than we thought, that's irreversible.
The new pesticides are considered short-chain PFAS, which means they stay in the body for a short period of time. Experts say they are not as dangerous as longer-chain chemicals. Arkansas doesn't have a policy for PFAS standards in the state. Research by the center shows about 30 million pounds of short and ultra-short-chain pesticide PFAS are currently being used in the United States. Donnelly says they recently published a paper showing pesticides are increasingly fluorinated, which is the process that creates PFAS.
What we're seeing right now is the new generation of pesticides, and it's genuinely frightening. At a time when most industries are transitioning away from PFAS, the pesticide industry is doubling down.
The Federal Environmental Policy Watchdog Organization, Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, recently sent a petition to the Trump administration recommending the EPA adopt the broader definition of PFAS and ban the use of pesticides that contain them. This story was produced with original reporting from Lisa Held for Civil Eats. I'm Frieda Ross, Arkansas News Service.
In July, Congress voted to cease all federal funding for public media. The ultimate effect on National Public Radio and its local stations remains to be seen, but many are worried. In the meantime, NPR CEO Catherine Maher said last week that the network's $300 million annual budget would be balanced. NPR's fiscal year begins October 1st. Listener contributions have spiked up significantly, helping to make up for the cuts. But officials don't know how long that generosity will last. So far, NPR has not yet revealed its specific strategy to address the new financial circumstances. It does plan to cut more than $5 million over the coming year. There are no layoffs or big changes in programming planned for now. Maher is offering $8 million in relief to stations most affected by having to pay NPR programming costs. There have been at least 332 layoffs in public media since July 18, when the Republican-led Congress defunded public media. NPR has looked for new sources of revenue. For example, NPR Music has placed an experimental Donate Now button on Tiny Desk concerts, including a session with Ed Sheeran. The public radio network currently has 244 member stations. Maher and others think some 70 to 80 stations may close. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which Congress set up more than 50 years ago to distribute federal money to public television and radio stations, will effectively shut down on September 30th, though a skeleton staff will remain for several months. Until now, PBS typically received about 15% of revenues from federal sources. NPR received far less money directly from the federal government, only about 1 to 2% of its budget in a typical year. CPB last year committed to award NPR a $1.96 million grant designed to assure fairness in the network's coverage. So far paid, it has paid out just $550,000. NPR is hoping to receive the money in CPB's closing days, but it is unsure whether or not that will happen. World Alzheimer's Day is Sunday, and experts are speaking out about the need for families to have hard discussions before severe illness sets in. Suzanne Potter has the details in California.
Sunday is World Alzheimer's Day, so advocates are spreading the word about tools available to help families talk about dementia. A new card game called the Dementia Deck will make its debut, intended to spur important conversations while a patient still has clarity. Lisa Paul, a medical social worker who created the game, says it's important that patients communicate their wishes so caregivers aren't left to wonder.
Some of the main decision points are when a person is no longer able to swallow, would they want a feeding tube? When they no longer recognize people, would they want to continue with cancer treatment if that was something that was recommended?
The Dementia Deck is the third in the Death Deck series. It helps families talk about things like advanced directives, hospice, and palliative care, but also about ways to give people more good days, filled with things that bring them joy, like hobbies or music. The Dementia Deck costs just under $30 and is available on the Death Deck website. Paul collaborated with Jessica Empeño, a medical social worker with the nonprofit Compassion and Choices, to adapt the Death Deck using the organization's Dementia Values and Priorities tool. Empeño says the online tool is for everyone, not just for people with dementia.
The Dementia Values and Priorities tool is a free planning resource to include dementia in end-of-life conversations. It creates a free dementia directive that they can include with their advanced directive.
The Priorities tool is available in English, Spanish, and Chinese. According to the Alzheimer's Association, about 720,000 Californians over age 65 live with the disease. Almost 1.4 million people in the Golden State serve as their caregivers. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You are listening to a fall membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem and Dave Johnson. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Edwin J. Vieira, Brian Bull, and Frieda Ross. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for the Global Citizen International Digest.
Welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest with Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. It's critical commentary on foreign affairs from a human interest perspective. The opinions expressed in the following segment are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories. Poland shoots down Russian drones. The U.S. and China trade representatives meet. And human trafficking for scamming operations is big business in Myanmar. First, Poland shoots down Russian drones. For the first time in the Ukraine war, a NATO ally, Poland, has fired a shot. Poland's Air Force shot down several Russian drones that crossed as far as 300 miles into Polish territory across from western Ukraine. Poland called the incident a deliberate act of aggression. Its response reportedly had NATO's full consent. Poland